Aloha, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Welcome to The Body Show. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but nothing replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. How would you know if you had asthma or if you were having troubles with your breathing? Is there a diagnostic test to help you? Can inhalers just fix everything, or is there something going on internally that needs to be addressed? Well, today we are lucky to have Maya Nordstrom in the studio. She has almost a decade of experience as a nurse practitioner, currently working in the pulmonary department at Straub Medical Center as part of Hawaii Pacific Health. And we're going to talk today about asthma. As the kids go out and play in the summer and enjoy themselves when they're out of school, and as people go out and do more activities, you know, Maya, sometimes these things happen where people start to emerge from a very busy work or school schedule, and they start to have some trouble with their breathing. When you talked with patients about asthma, what do you call it? What is it?
Well, it's twofold. Number one, there's inflammation going on in the body, specifically in the airways. And also there's this what we call hyper-responsiveness, where the muscles around those airways in our lungs tend to tighten up. And then it causes those symptoms that people are very familiar with: coughing, wheezing, chest tightness, feelings of shortness of breath.
So is everybody who's wheezing having asthma, or is wheezing one of the symptoms but not necessarily characteristic of asthma?
Correct. It's other things could mimic wheezing too, like heart failure or certain type of other lung diseases like COPD. But also some types of asthmas are just a cough. There's something called cough asthma variants, where some patients will just have this dry cough and won't feel the wheezing, won't feel the chest tightness. So it's very important for us as clinicians to get a really detailed history to figure out, okay, what is going on? Is this truly asthma? Because sometimes patients come to us and they've been diagnosed and stamped with asthma, but in reality, they might be having something else.
So what kind of questions would you ask?
As far as when is it triggered, usually asthma has triggers. So sometimes patients will say, oh yeah, I'm fine as long as I stay away from, you know, my dad's dog, or, you know, I'm fine as long as, you know, I take my inhaler before going on a swim. So certainly activities, allergies are a big trigger, weather changes or exposures to like smoke, cigarettes, perfumes.
So if you have those exposures, are you more likely to have asthma if you start to have the cough or you start to have the breathing trouble?
Yeah, then we're more suspicious that you probably have an asthma because something's triggering it. So if a patient has like wheezing and they're like, yeah, first thing in the morning I wheeze, or, you know, or just throughout the day and they're taking their inhaler and it's not helping, then we have to consider other things and say, okay, what else is going on that might be causing some of your symptoms?
So very often someone might see their primary care provider and they might be told to try an inhaler as a trial. Like, hey, it sounds like you might have asthma. Try this inhaler. Come back and let me know. Is that an adequate way to treat it, or should more testing be done?
Usually, yes, it's adequate in the beginning, first line. Number one, it's really hard to get in at times to do a pulmonary function test. And a pulmonary function test is not always like the be-all, end-all in diagnosing asthma. It really is a clinical diagnosis, because you could do a pulmonary function test and be completely normal. You know, that doesn't tell us that you don't have asthma, but it just gives us more information.
So you could just get an inhaler. Now, what sort of inhalers might you use as a trial to determine if it works with some of your breathing, and whether it be the wheezing or the coughing or your other symptoms? Which would be your first one
usually,
to use?
Usually, if it's sporadic, we would start with something called a short-acting bronchodilator, like albuterol. But if a patient has a lot of symptoms where it sounds more like allergic component, more inflammation, giving an inhaler with a steroid component really is the best treatment.
And would it be just the steroid component or a combination?
First, it depends on their symptoms. If their symptoms are like they're having it more than like 2 to 3 times a week, we'll just go in and do a combination of like a longer acting version of albuterol and the steroid. But if their symptoms are pretty controlled, then yeah, just the basic inhaled corticosteroid. It all depends, because we could go what we could de-escalate a patient. Like if they're coming to us and they have a lot of symptoms, yeah, we're going to give you the maximum dose of treatment. And then once you start feeling better, then we'll de-escalate and like go down to a lower dosing or change the inhaler completely.
So if you come in and you're having a lot of symptoms, a lot of difficulties, you might get treated to the maximum level, and then afterwards maybe you don't need as much.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a tricky part sometimes, because sometimes patients will say, oh, I feel so good, and they'll stop taking their inhaler.
There's the key.
Yeah, and a couple of months later, they're like having bad symptoms when they should have continued. So it really is under the recommendation of whoever, you know, gave them the prescription.
Would there ever be a situation where you could say, just use it as needed, and then check in later, try and determine how often were they using it to see if it needs to be used on a regular basis?
Yes, and that's why taking the history is so important, because we do have some patients where their asthma only acts up when they have a cold. You know, if you have a typical cold, week tops, and your symptoms go away, great. But for some of our patients, they only get their quote-unquote asthma when they get a cold, but the cold and cough last for 6 to 8 weeks. That's not a cold. That's most likely an asthma exacerbation. So when they know they have a cold or it's, you know, flu season, they'll use their inhaler more frequently. And then, you know, once they start feeling better, then they could just use it as needed. But it all depends, because there's different kinds.
So that's really the key, is if you get sick and you start to develop that lingering cough, you think it's just because I was sick, but as you hit that 6 to 8 week point, it's more than just being sick.
Yes.
We're dealing with some level of inflammation and irritation in the airways, mm-hmm. and that's what we're calling asthma.
In certain types of people, yeah.
How would you differentiate that from like a post-infectious bronchospasm? Would, again, it be that history that you're really
exactly.
trying to figure out?
It would be that history. Because if this is repeated, you know, year after year, since, you know, even childhood or, you know, late middle adulthood, then we would be more suspicious of asthma. But in the past couple of years during the pandemic and the rise of other, you know, viral illnesses, a lot of patients without asthma are getting sick and having a lingering cough for several weeks. So that's where, you know, again, taking the history is important.
Is there any negative impact if you were to use something like a steroid inhaler without the diagnosis of asthma, but because you're having this chronic cough and it's bothering you so much, and you know that it's going to be my February cough that lasts for 6 to 8 weeks. Would there be a downside if you were to use an inhaler like that just to help you get over that process of healing?
It depends. If you were instructed to use it that way, then no, absolutely not. But if you've been seeing your primary care doctor and you had this chronic cough and they give you the inhaler and it sort of works, but it comes back, or you have other underlying conditions that we should be concerned about, something more serious, like if you're a smoker or have history of lung cancer in your family, or if your cough is wet. So asthma, you shouldn't have a wet cough. Something might be going on other than that. Or if you have a history of heart failure or some cardiac history, it's important to discuss with your doctor rather than, you know, always jumping to that inhaler.
Well, that's a really good point, is that an asthma cough isn't wet.
Yes, yeah.
It just isn't. If you've got a wet cough, that's not your asthma. And using your inhaler 4 or 5 times is not really going to fix things.
Yeah.
All right. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here in the studio with Maya Nordstrom. She is a nurse practitioner at Straub Medical Center in the pulmonary department. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more about some of the ways in which inhalers can be different, whether by the ingredients or by the way that you use them, and how to know if you're using it correctly. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and today I have Maya Nordstrom here. She has almost a decade of experience as a nurse practitioner currently in the pulmonary department at Straub Medical Center as part of Hawaii Pacific Health. And we're talking today about asthma. How do you know that that's what you have? And if you do respond to an inhaler, how long should you use it? How do you know when you can stop if allowed? And what type of symptoms might not really be asthma? So right at the top of the show, we talked a little bit about the fact that it is okay to consider using an inhaler as a trial basis to see if this works for some of the symptoms, if a clear history indicates this is probably asthma.
Yes.
And then if you do use that inhaler, if it's a short-acting inhaler and your symptoms seem to get better and it's related to an exposure, if you can avoid that exposure or control it in some fashion, maybe you don't have to use it regularly.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely. If there's a lot of inflammation in the airways, you may need to use this on a regular basis. So don't stop unless your provider tells you it's okay.
Yes. And sometimes you get two inhalers, one inhaler that we call a maintenance inhaler, and that usually has a steroid in it. And then your other inhaler is a rescue inhaler, which is usually albuterol. We try to avoid using it as a emergency inhaler because some patients will only use it if they are feeling like they're going to die and go to...
That means they waited too long. You need a rescue before
then. Yeah,
okay.
So no, we it's just a rescue or your symptom inhaler. If you're having symptoms, that's when you use it.
Okay. Now, different inhalers, we call them inhalers, but sometimes there's other delivery devices. Which are the ones that are out there right now? What's the most common type of, I guess, the standard inhaler, but what else is out there as far as trying to learn how to use it?
Yeah, so there's also spacers that patients could use with their inhalers that allow them to actually get the most medication. Because sometimes it's hard with the hand-eye coordination and squeezing the pump and then inhaling. There's a lot of steps in using an inhaler, and using it correctly or incorrectly, could mean a lot on how patients' asthma is controlled. So you could find, on website, on American Lung Association, on how to use an inhaler properly. But I always recommend patients bring your inhaler with you to your doctor's appointment. Even if you've had your inhaler and you've had asthma since a child, you might have been doing it wrong this whole time and not even realize it. So demonstrating your inhaler technique to your provider is going to be important.
Do they use any more of the discs, the ones, the powder inhaler or the powder
yes.
inhalation?
Yeah. So there's different types of discs. So there's ones that are once a day, there's twice a day. But the technique for each inhaler is so important because they're all different. What's another barrier is that I may want to order this specific type of inhaler for you, but by the time you go to the pharmacy, your insurance already denied it. So the pharmacist, will ask for a different type of inhaler that is on your drug coverage, and it might be something completely different from what I explained to you on how to use it. And sometimes the pharmacists, they're so busy, they can't show you how to use this different inhaler. So when you open up the box, it's something completely different.
That makes it really complicated because how are you going to know how to predict? But beyond that, patients reading this information, particularly if they're feeling short of breath, not the best time to have to try and understand that. But okay, so bring your inhaler when you see your provider. See if you can at least demonstrate, or they can demonstrate, how to use it correctly in general so you're better able to do that. But consider some of those assistive devices like spacers or some other way that it can make it easier.
Yeah. And then there's other treatment options too for patients with more severe severe asthma where there's biologics is what we call them, where there's actually injectables. And depending on what kind of asthma you have, certain ones might be more appropriate for you. And a lot of them have been life-changing for some patients, especially that have what we call like eosinophilic type of asthma, where there's a certain inflammation in their body that, just really responds the best to steroids. But because of how, certain steroids could actually cause, lower response, so you're more susceptible to infections. We don't want to always give you steroids, or osteoporosis, we don't always want to give you steroids. So there are other options for those patients who are more severe and who need something better than just an inhaler and prednisone every, every 3 months or so.
So some of those side effects you described, more likely with the pill steroids like the prednisone, as opposed to the inhaled steroids. Inhaled steroids, generally pretty safe.
Yeah, they're generally pretty safe, but number one, always rinse, gargle, and spit after using that inhaled steroids because you don't want something called thrush. You don't want a fungal infection in the back of your throat.
Sure, that can happen. So if you're using the steroid inhaler carefully, hopefully you won't get to the point where your asthma flares so much. But if it does, then that's when you would get those prednisone pills, and you don't want to have to use that all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
So you mentioned some of the biologics. Do you have any people that you've taken care of who have asthma that you recall how often they had difficulty before and after the biologics, how much better they're doing?
Yes, so much so that they stopped using their maintenance inhaler.
Wow.
And I have to tell them, no, this is in conjunction with that maintenance inhaler. But yeah, we've been having a lot of patients do really well. And the biggest, you know, barrier is just coverage and cost. Unfortunately, these biologics are so expensive. But for some patients who, you know, end up in the hospital or who have been intubated, go emergency room visits, you know, those are the patients that we really target and say, no, we need to do something, you know, and be more aggressive in treating your asthma.
So are there certain, what would you consider to be a well-controlled person with asthma with their condition versus somebody who does not have good control? Let's talk about good control first. What would that look like?
Yeah, good control is you don't have symptoms, you know, more than twice a month or less than that. Yeah, those are patients where, yeah, they're pretty stable. If you don't have any symptoms at all, that would be well controlled.
Okay, no symptoms is even the best, but if it's a couple of times a month,
okay, that's pretty, you know, good control. But if it's like 2 to 3 times a week, that's not so good. And if it's every day and you're using your rescue inhaler multiple times a day, that is not normal. You should not be using your rescue inhaler that much. You really should talk to your healthcare provider. And if your healthcare provider has you on the maximum dose inhalers and you're still having symptoms, we really have to look and say, okay, is this really asthma or is there something else going on? Or are you a candidate for one of these, you know, biologic medications?
Sure, that may be the point where you need to see an expert to help differentiate those two.
Yes.
Now, kids love sports, and they often play a lot of sports. It's summertime, and they're out playing with their friends. Could initiation of some outdoor activities like that cause an exacerbation of symptoms that brings them to their attention of their doctor sooner?
Yes. So exercise-induced asthma is another type of asthma that we see a lot in kids as well. But also, you know, playing sports, being in grass. Some kids are allergic to grass or pollens. So then that triggers them. They think, oh, it's just their exercise. But sometimes it can actually be what's in their environment floating around in the air as well. But yes, if a patient or, you know, a kid's going out playing their sports, okay, make sure you take your inhaler, you know, right before you go out in the field. There's no real, like, you don't want to say, like, oh, take a minute. Take it 30 minutes before, you know, playing your sport. Sometimes you'll forget, like, you know, what was it, 30 minutes? Just go ahead and use it when you remember, you know, closest to whenever you're going to play your sport.
How long does it take from when you say, okay, I'm going to use the inhaler to when it kicks in?
Oh, should be like a few minutes. Yeah. A
couple of minutes.
Now, 30 minutes is when it's peaked and it will work the best, but it should work in a few minutes.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Maya Nordstrom, who is a nurse practitioner in the pulmonary department at Straub Medical Center. And we're going to talk some more about some tips on what to do if you're having some troubles with asthma. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and I'm here with Maya Nordstrom. She's a nurse practitioner in the pulmonary division at Straub Medical Center with almost a decade of experience. And we're talking today about asthma. How do you know you have it? How should you treat it? And if you do need medication, what else could you do to maybe help yourself with your symptoms? So right before the break, we talked about good control, no symptoms. Bad control, using that rescue inhaler every day. And certainly we've talked a little bit about seriousness of asthma with the need for emergency room visits, hospitalizations. You referenced that breathing tube intubation too. So those are things that really put you in a whole different category. Let's talk a little bit about some things that people might be able to do for themselves. Are there risks that some people might be able to manage that if they took care of that could actually reduce their exacerbations of asthma?
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit. Allergens is a big one, especially for kids. So just avoiding things that trigger you or known allergies. Sometimes it's important to get allergy testing, especially in kids. But also as far as other things in life is like, you know, controlling acid reflux. Acid reflux is a big part of things that could irritate that airway, cause that inflammation, irritation, and make asthma worse. Sleep apnea is another one. There's a lot of correlation with patients with asthma and sleep apnea. So if you go in for asthma, we usually ask some questions about sleep apnea during that history and physical, and asking those questions to see, you know, does this patient also have, you know, other conditions?
So if they had acid reflux, for example, could they use some medication like antacids, or elevate the head of their bed, or not eat the foods that trigger it, or take some of the acid-reducing medications? So doing that could actually reduce their asthma exacerbations.
Yes. So diet and lifestyle modifications are number one. There are a lot of over-the-counter acid-reducing medications, but you want to be careful with that, because sometimes patients will just take it all the time, not tell their provider, and they actually have something more serious that's causing their acid reflux. So it's important to, you know, if you do have acid reflux, to really just mention it to your healthcare provider. And if you're taking like Tums on a regular basis, 2 to 3 times a week or more, certainly every day, you should probably talk to your provider about
that. Make sure there's nothing else that's causing that. Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned sleep apnea, and I'm curious about how that would relate to asthma. Is it just relating to the reactivity of the airways, or is it something relating to the fact that you're not getting enough oxygen at night, or how do those two things
connect?
A little bit of both.
Also the inflammatory part too. So sleep apnea could cause inflammation in the body as well. So that's, you know, a side piece to that. But yes, low oxygen levels too. Generally, asthmatics don't have low oxygen levels. But if you're making your lungs work harder and your heart work harder because you have sleep apnea, that's just going to make it worse during the day too. Sometimes patients have shortness of breath, and we treat their sleep apnea, and then they're not so short of breath anymore. So if you already have underlying asthma, that could, you know, just trigger it and make it worse too. Acid reflux and sleep apnea also have a relationship. So that's another reason why too. Sleep apnea could also cause worsening acid reflux and then cause worsening asthma. So it's kind of like a vicious cycle.
It's kind of all in a cycle, right? Yeah. Right. So the apnea and the reflux could be connected. The reflux, the asthma, the apnea and the asthma. It's all together.
Yes.
Other than using medications and avoiding allergens and treating those other conditions, are there other things people can do to help get their lungs in better condition? Are there such things as like lung exercises, deep breathing exercises, or something people can do to help themselves?
There are. So just exercise in general, anything to get out, fresh air, you know, just to use your lungs. Singing is a great one. Playing an instrument, of course, wind instrument. But also as far as exercising your lungs, they do have like things you could buy online that could, you know, exercise your lungs. They look like little trumpets or little things with balls, different types of incentive spirometers or positive expiratory pressure devices. But really, you don't necessarily need that if you just have asthma. It's just being active as much as possible is important.
And what about doing more diaphragmatic breathing, trying to really work on breathing deeply and slowly and kind of, I don't want to call it correct breathing as opposed to, you know, breathing that isn't correct, but is there some benefit to doing a targeted breathing exercise to like improve your capacity?
Yes, especially when you're not in an asthma attack.
Okay, so don't try and do it when you're attacking. Do it so you can prevent the attack.
Yes, because then you'll really use, you know, your diaphragm and really expand your airways. But when you're having an attack, if you're trying to get those deep breaths in but can't, it actually triggers more anxiety. So you actually get more short of breath. And that's actually another component is emotions. Anxiety could trigger asthma. Laughter could trigger asthma. So
laughter could trigger asthma. Okay.
Yeah. So if you've ever heard someone like laugh hysterically and all of a sudden starts going in a coughing fit, they might have asthma.
Interesting. Okay, I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah, because it's spasming the muscles around the airways. So you shouldn't be like having a coughing fit of like laughing like that.
Yeah, if you have a laughing fit that leads to coughing, it might be something
like
more than you expect.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm curious about the anxiety component because, again, we talk about that vicious cycle of acid reflux and apnea and asthma, but I think about the vicious cycle of I feel short of breath. It's making me anxious. So now I'm more short of breath. Now I'm more anxious. And it kind of starts this really vicious cycle of just feeling so uncomfortable.
Because that, chest tightness is, a red flag sign of asthma, but it's also for you know, for anxiety.
Right.
So so addressing, you know, anxiety too, underlying, is an important component of asthma too, because you also want to know that, okay, this chest tightness, okay, maybe it's not my asthma, maybe I'm not going to have a really bad asthma attack, because sometimes it could be triggering for some patients who had really bad asthma as a child and were hospitalized, and you know, they don't want to have those feelings again. So
sure, the trauma of previous health issues is something that I think we often misunderstand or overlook, because we're like, oh, that was when you're a kid and you're an adult now. But that does have a direct impact. In fact, during those formative years, sometimes more of an impact than you wish it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So be careful, treat the anxiety, but also treat the asthma, so that you can hopefully help to improve both. Now, the complicating factor of that is sometimes our friends, the albuterol beta agonists, can make your heart go faster, which makes you anxious, which then makes you feel like you're having a breathing problem. So it's just a big round circle.
Yes. So just knowing that this is a potential side effect, and that's to be expected, you know, when you take your albuterol.
All right, so keep that. Now, there's a version of albuterol that has a reduced likelihood of causing that faster heartbeat.
Yes, but it's more psychosomatic, like the clinical studies haven't really shown. Yeah, but if you tell a patient, you know, oh, the levalbuterol, but those patients listening right now, hey, if it's working for you and you feel less short of breath, good, because there is validity to, you know, kind of like a placebo effect. So.
Well, and I think validating someone's experience, too. I think in this case, you know, I that's news to me. I always thought that the levalbuterol or Xopenex had a much better plan on not accelerating the heart rate. But if that doesn't really happen in clinical practice, but if it's somebody's experience and it helps them to breathe, hey, look, that's really the key.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I remember just one episode where I had a super bad bronchitis, probably bordering on pneumonia, and I had trouble breathing. And I had to sleep upright that night. And I got to tell you, I had a whole new version of sympathy and empathy for anybody who's short of breath, because that is not a good feeling.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you have asthma, use your inhaler. Use it as directed.
Yes.
Don't just stop it when you feel better. Talk to your provider. And if you keep having problems with your asthma and it's not well controlled, you mentioned, really, that's a time to talk with your provider and get in to see either a pulmonary specialist or an allergist if that's the case, or maybe even address some of those other issues you mentioned, like acid reflux or apnea.
Yes, absolutely. And on the flip side, too, is if you've been on the same inhaler and you know it's like a high-dose inhaler, high-dose steroid, and you've been on it for years and your asthma symptoms are really well controlled, talk to your doctor about, maybe can I go down on a lower dose? Maybe I don't need to be on this high dose for so long.
That's very true. And I think that what we call de-escalation, or taking only the amount of medicine that you absolutely need.
Yes.
So that you don't wind up having more than necessary.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you have been a wealth of information for us today, and I really appreciate your sharing your expertise with us. This is Maya Nordstrom, and she is a nurse practitioner at Straub Medical Center, part of the Hawaii Pacific Health System, of almost a decade. So thank you for sharing what you know so that we can all breathe a little bit better as we get out there and hopefully do some activity and enjoy the summertime. If you'd like to hear this show again, you can click on hpr.org. You can follow the links to The Body Show. You can also find us on the HPR app. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and we'll be here next week and every Monday at 6:30 on HPR. We'll see you then. Woo!